The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Just to take a look at what's happening here, we had from Democrats years of investigations into how to keep Donald Trump off the ballot, how to get him into prison. You had the January 6th committee, which was a one-sided committee handpicked by Nancy Pelosi to find out all sorts of information. They handed that over to Jack Smith, but then destroyed the evidence so that Republicans, once they took over Congress, could not look through it. Jack Smith had years to work on this and other people at the Department of Justice. Even at the time that Joe Biden was elected, he said he hoped there would be a way to legally prevent his primary political opponent from being able to run for office. So you've had years of work put into this. The Trump team was asking for just a little bit of time to go through all the documents that they have gathered. This judge, who is very partisan, who's known for being partisan, says, no, we're going to do it right in the middle of the election season. And she's very partisan about how she's been very open about how much she hates Donald Trump. It seems like she should not be actually overseeing this trial, but that's what we have here. This is not election interference. I heard some people say this is election interference. This is straight up election rigging on the part of Democrats to keep their primary political opponent out of office.
She's the editor at The Federalist, and maybe she watched yesterday's show. I think I made that exact point. I don't know if it was right at the start, but this is not interference. It's straight up, as she says, it's straight up election rigging. Their masks are off. They're overthrowing the government before our eyes and destroying political opponents if they could get away with it. That's exactly what they would do. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots to get to. A pretty good summary there from Molly Hemingway, just dissecting all the things that the radical left, the communist left, has gotten away with now for years. First things first, TrumpetDaily.com. That gets you to the live video stream of this show. Just go to TrumpetDaily.com. Tune in every weekday morning at 11.05 a.m. in the central time zone of these United States, or what was once a united country. The other channel, don't forget about Rumble. You can go to the Rumble channel, search for The Trumpet Daily. You can get involved in the live chat and leave comments. Of course, give us the thumbs up Rumble too if you're going to visit that channel. And don't forget about the evening replay at LFA TV. That too is at Rumble. That plays every evening at 8 p.m. Central Time and 9 p.m. on the East Coast. My Twitter handle is at Stephen Fleury, Stephen with a PH. And you can follow some of the promos that we put together for this show, the montages. We'll try to tweet those out from time to time as well. Maybe even get them to you ahead of the broadcast so you have some insights into what we'll be discussing on each program. Each day, this is from America Has Been Fundamentally Transformed. It's an article that was at the Trumpet magazine in March of 2020, so it goes back a few years. And if you haven't subscribed, by the way, to the Trumpet magazine, you can, of course, read the Trumpet articles at our website, thetrumpet.com. But if you'd like the magazine delivered to your mailbox every month, just call our operators today and request a free one-year subscription to the Trumpet. That's 1-866-930-3024. We'll flash that number up on the screen from time to time. This is my father writing. He said, Mr. Obama is contemptuously and openly discussing what he meant by fundamentally transforming America. He became a lot more open about what he meant with that statement back in 2008. Once he was out of office, you know, Donald Trump shocked the world, but Obama triggered the coup, as General Flynn said, the official start date, January 5th, 2017. And then while he was laying low, although he's not really that far away from the White House, he was just down the street, still is. He's the dear leader. He's enjoying his third term. Imagine this. He's enjoying his third term of fundamentally transforming the United States. And Rachel Maddow,
last night is waxing eloquent about how that if Donald Trump somehow wins next year, that's the end of elections in the United States. That's the start of a fascist dictatorship. Here's the dear leader functioning like a good dictator, a communist dictator, and he's surrounded by communist Marxists. People scoff when you say that. There's all these stories about this judge and her connections to a Marxist this or that, or a parent in the case of Pete Buttigieg. Obama himself bragged in his memoir about hanging out with Marxist professors. And we know all about Frank Marshall Davis, John Brennan. I mean, you could just go right down the list. How could a guy like John Brennan, who voted for the Communist Party in 1976, how could he work his way up to the head of the CIA under, wait for it, Barack Hussein Obama? The communists, as I say, they've thrown off the masks. What did Herbert Armstrong say or write way back in the 1940s and 50s? I'll give you some quotes from him in just a bit. But he... just suffice it to say, I mean, he was well aware of the communist attack on the United States of America. That's what this book is all about. I mean, this is writing about it in the last several years. Herbert Armstrong was talking about the communist infiltration back in the 40s and 50s, almost 100 years ago. Think about that. It says, in the past, such revolutions, speaking of a communist revolution, they usually caused millions of people to spill their blood. And my father said, this is from March of 2020. If you think my view is unreal, consider this. Never have we seen a more bitterly divided America. And this man who fundamentally transformed America caused much of this division. He's the cause, the dear leader, the dictator in chief. Never mind what Rachel Maddow says. Tucker Carlson, he gave an interview with someone yesterday and said he's never been more worried about America's future. Never. What is going on? Are we really and truly living in the last days? You better believe it. Even as I was saying in class this morning, the fact that there's scoffers, anti-God scoffers all around, is in itself proof that we're living in the last days. Read 2 Peter 3 in verse 3. I touched on this story yesterday. It's at Red State. It says, Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan is now demanding answers from Attorney General Merrick Garland and White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients as to why a prosecutor working with Special Counsel Jack Smith was meeting with people from the White House, the White House's counsel's office at the White House, multiple times in the run-up to Smith charging former President Donald Trump. Can we say collusion? Because that's exactly what it looks like. That's not exactly what it looks like. It's exactly what it is. This is year seven, year six or seven of the coup, the Obama orchestrated coup. And of course, Jim Jordan, for his part, he's demanding answers. That's about the most that Republicans will ever do or say. We need answers. We need answers. Look, they're giving all the from the Jan 6 committee, as you just heard from the cold open. They gave all the information over to Jack Smith, and then they destroyed it because they didn't want Republicans to have it. And then you look at the way this communist Marxist judge in D.C. We'll get to her in just a moment. She's putting it on the fast track. I mean, she's only giving Trump's lawyers about 6 months to go through 12 million documents. You even just do the math, and it's impossible. So they just throw a bunch of information out there. There's the things that Trump's attorneys need. It's buried deep in there somewhere. Who knows if they'll even be able to find it? I mean, okay, Trump has more resources than your average, ordinary American. And he's got expensive attorneys, and I'm sure he'll have more than one attorney working this case. But think of the millions and millions of dollars that are just going to be wasted away because of what he's going up against. He's there standing, as this book brings out, as the article from the January issue of The Trumpet says, he's virtually standing alone. Bitter, bitter affliction indeed. We played the clip yesterday on the show. Remember from the Trump campaign. They released this 10-minute video, and it shows how that the last three times Republicans won fair and square, Democrats, even the highest ranking among them, totally rejected the outcome of those elections, 2000, 2004, and 2016. I remember we played the 2000 time period yesterday. I'm old enough to remember that as it played out, the goal with the radical Democrats was to just keep counting in Florida until they finally flipped the state and Al Gore wins. Now, they were able to carry out that mission, that goal, in 2020, 20 years on. I mean, they figured out how they needed things like COVID as a pretext to mass mail-in ballot everything. But they figured out how to shut everything down, keep manufacturing ballots until you get as many as you need to win. In 2000, the year 2000, they nearly pulled that off then. We wrote an article after that, all those shenanigans in Florida with the hanging chads and so on. We wrote an article at The Trumpet, this is 23 years ago, titled "The Rule of Lawyers." There were some ominous signs even then that everything was beginning to unravel. What happens when you have radicals on the one side and no respect for the rule of law, and it just becomes the rule of lawyers, lawyers arguing one side or the other? This is from a more recent article at The Trumpet, May of 2022. It says, the founding fathers intended for lawyers to play a pivotal role in the survival of the United States. It says, in the Republic's early days, lawyers provided ballast for stability, wrote John McGinnis at City Journal. The judiciary's sober attachment to formal order was a primary reason for giving it the power to review the constitutionality of legislation. It says here, law was the profession most likely to preserve the enduring framework of Republican government against the mutable passions of the hour. Law, I mean, that's back when I know lawyers still give an oath to defend the Constitution, but they don't do it, so many of them. Not today. But back then, I mean, this was a noble profession, and we needed that law branch or that judicial branch to just uphold the law. It says a great change has taken place in America that has transformed lawyers from guardians of the Republic to waging lawfare against the Republic. Instead of seeing the Constitution as the guiding document, it's seen as the enemy. So many of them see the Constitution as the enemy. I mean, go back to what the dear leader was saying in the early 2000s. Where he talked about all the constitutional restraints, and we needed to get rid of those. We needed an evolving constitution. It says, now a majority of lawyers have become agents of the radical left deep state, implementing an agenda to fundamentally transform America. I mean, the swamp's just full of them. Most of the people serving in Congress, lawyers. Most of the ones sitting on the bench, lawyers. Most of the ones heading up the DOJ, they don't have to be a lawyer. But everyone that gets appointed to the DOJ or FBI, they're all attorneys. And so many of them are actively working to undermine the Constitution instead of upholding it and defending it. It says here, the main driver of radical change in lawyers was a radical change in the law schools, an ideological shift in modern education in law schools. And the author here goes back to the 1960s. And what was happening again? Herbert Armstrong, way ahead of his time, he was warning of this. He pinpointed the cause of this radicalism as a communist infiltration of America. When you call our operators, make sure you request "He Was Right." I forget the exact chapter that goes by that title, The Communist Infiltration, but it's in there. It's in there. And there are many other prophecies that we take you through. I mean, that's one of the great proofs, as I was saying in doctrines this morning, of God's existence. The fact that there's so many, we're witnessing a lot of prophecies unfold right before our eyes, but there's a lot of other prophecies. A third of the Bible is prophecy, and a lot of the prophecies have been fulfilled. God gave us the forecast in advance. This is quoting Mr. Armstrong from 1956 about this communist infiltration. It says, it's a kind of warfare we don't understand. We don't know how to cope with it. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. This article then goes on to say, after quoting Mr. Armstrong, each stage of this conspiracy, orchestrated by Barack Obama, was enabled by radical left lawyers working as intermediaries between the different agencies, working the courts to justify illegal activities, or radical judges violating the Constitution. The Supreme Court ought to be looking at what this judge in D.C. is doing, making it impossible for Donald Trump to even defend himself. I guess they'll let it play out. That's the way so many of them think. Just let it play out, and then in the end, maybe we can do something to fix it. They ought to intervene now and do something. This is from the New York Post. The judge assigned to former President Trump's multiple indictments stemming from his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election is the scion of a family of revolutionary Marxists in her native Jamaica. No wonder Obama appointed her. She's cut from the same cloth. Of course. It says Judge Tanya Chutkan, an Obama appointee, is the granddaughter of Frank Hill, a Jamaican communist revolutionary, who along with his brother Ken were briefly jailed by the island's British governor during World War II over suspicions of subversive activities. This is the background that these people come from. And then people come and they scoff. They're not Marxist revolutionaries. I mean, they're not actually communists. These are Americans. They're subversives. And they're carrying out another communist revolution in plain sight. It says here, Hill is the father of Noel Hill, Judge Chutkan's mother, public records show. Frank, along with his brother Ken and fellow comrades Richard Hart and Arthur Henry, were expelled from the People's National Party of Jamaica for espousing communist views. Just for espousing communist views. Now, again, put all of them together, birds of a feather, whether it's Frank Marshall Davis or the dear leader, or John Brennan, who rose in ranks of power during the dear leader's first two presidencies, his first two terms. Then you look at some of these appointees. It continues. This is from the Washington Examiner. Pete Buttigieg's father was a Marxist professor who lauded the Communist Manifesto. I mean, can this really be happening? Is this real? Is this for real? It is. Pete Buttigieg. He's right there at the top now. It says Joseph Buttigieg, who died in January at the age of 71, immigrated to the U.S. in the 1970s from Malta, and in 1980 joined the University of Notre Dame faculty, where he taught modern European literature and literary theory. He supported an updated version of Marxism that jettisoned some of Marx and Engels' more doctrinaire theories, though he was undoubtedly a Marxist. This 12.6 million papers or documents that Trump's attorneys have to sift through. You've got Chutkan, the Marxist judge in D.C., saying, no, I'm not going to give you until 2026. It's unheard of for a case of this magnitude involving this much information to just be hurried through in 6 months' time. Here again, as I said yesterday, think about the January 6th protesters. Their cases are much more straightforward. And yet, so many of them just languishing away in jail for 2 years, more than two, just waiting for a trial date. And then you've got this lady just forcing it on through, scheduling it right before Super Tuesday. It's so obvious. It's not election interference. As Hemingway said there at the top, this is election rigging. It's in plain sight. This is from Alan Dershowitz. He says, by the way, if you do the arithmetic, the trial is now scheduled for March 4 with 12.6 million papers that have been turned over as exculpatory evidence. It would require the defense to read 71,000 pages per day between now and the time of trial. So we're seeing a lot of misinformation being given to the public. 71,000 documents per day just to cobble together a decent defense of a former president of the United States of America. Is America under attack? Yesterday, as I say, I played you the opening bit from that video released by the Trump campaign. I'll get to that in just a second. Let me just go through some of this from Rachel Maddow last night. Really, I mean, just stunning stuff. These people have lost their minds. You run out of words to describe them. They're lunatics. They really are. This piece at the New York Times, this is what triggered Maddow's little oration last evening, her monologue. The New York Times on Monday wrote, Trump has made no secret in private conversations with his aides of his desire to solve his jumble of legal problems by winning the election. If either of the two federal trials he is confronting is delayed until after the race and Mr. Trump prevails, he could seek to pardon himself after taking office or have his attorney general simply dismiss the matters altogether. This terrifies the communist left. In their mind, he's already been convicted and he belongs in prison. The thought of Americans having a say as to who they want in office and whether he pardons himself or not, and the people like her, they want no part of Americans having a say in who runs their government. Listen to this unbelievable monologue from last night, clip one.
Per the New York Times, it does seem sort of significant that that's what he's now telling people. That's what he's telling people he's going to do. He will solve his jumble of legal problems by winning the election. The election means one of two things, if this is the way he's going to approach it. Either he loses the election and he goes to prison. Or he wins the election, he doesn't go to prison, and is that for life that he gets to be president? Will we keep having more elections or no? If every election is a new opportunity for him to go to prison, do you think he allows us to have new elections?
So there are your two options. He either loses the election and goes to prison, or he wins the election and he's president for life. He's president forever. It's a fascist dictatorship that's coming. She's announcing, she's basically, these are the same people trying to cancel the election next year by disqualifying Donald Trump. These are the same people that are out there heartily endorsing Obama's third term when you've obviously got a senile that's occupying the Oval Office at the moment, a senile fake president at that. And they're going on and on about, here again, about what might happen. Just crazy, crazy reasoning. Starts with the New York Times, that's the paper of record. And then Maddow, I mean, you could say, well, people don't watch her as much as maybe Fox or whatever. Listen, she's as influential on the radical left as pretty much any of those talking heads. Maybe more so. So there she is saying that if he happens to win an election, a Democratic election, and becomes the duly elected president, that's the beginning of a fascist dictatorship. He's going to be president for life. Well, he would have to be because he needs to remain president or else he'll go to prison. Well, how did we get this deranged? And there's a lot of people that think this way, and that, as my father said, I mean, the bitter division when you see what the other side is fighting for. And Donald Trump now saying, you know, Glenn Beck asked him, you said lock her up in 2016 and that actually never happened. Or are you actually gonna lock people up this time? And he basically says, I have no choice. So how do you think that's gonna set with the radical left? You think they're just gonna sit back and take it? Ready for war, that's the January issue of the Trumpet magazine. Make sure you get a subscription
Here again, this Trump ad from yesterday. I went through the 2000 time period with you yesterday. This is the part I had completely forgotten about. The fact that even after John Kerry lost to George W. Bush in 2004, there were a lot of Democrats that rejected the results of that election as well. This is clip four.
In 2004, the Republicans won again. And once again, the Democrats claimed the election was stolen.
We could not declare that the election of November 2nd, 2004 was free and clear and transparent and real. There must be independent testing of the voting machines used in Ohio.
There were numerous irregularities in Ohio, including large percentages of rejections of provisional balloting, problems with voting machines.
I'm not confident that the election in Ohio was fairly decided.
Some machines malfunctioned, causing votes to be counted more than once, or not at all.
As we look at our election system, I think it's fair to say that there are many legitimate questions about its accuracy, about its integrity.
There are still legitimate concerns over the integrity of our elections.
Also that these machines are hackable. A dishonest employee of the vendor, or a dishonest employee of a local board of elections, or simply someone who knows electronics and has a computer at home, could hack into these machines and put in a secret instruction to disregard every 20th Democratic vote or 10% to the Kerry or to the Bush vote or whatever, and you might not ever know it.
Treating today's electoral vote count in Congress as a meaningless ritual would be an insult to our democracy unless we registered our own protest against the obviously flawed voting process that took place in so many of our states.
Based upon an inordinate number of allegations suggesting gross voting rights violations and misconduct, I join with my colleagues in objecting to counting the state of Ohio's electoral votes.
Among the Democrats who claimed the 2004 election was stolen was Democrat nominee John Kerry and his wife, Teresa Hines.
I arranged to meet Senator Kerry at a fundraiser to give him a copy of my book. He told me he now thinks the election was stolen.
The wife of John Kerry said she has lingering doubts about the legitimacy of the election.
Even Mr. and Mrs. Kerry, the two that lost, the Democrat Party is the party of election denial. It's happened in the last three elections that Republicans won. Then they steal it in 2020 like they tried to do in 2000. Donald Trump calls them out, and now he's indicted for it four times. You know what's interesting about that video? Is that video, as great as it is, it's only 10 minutes, that video would never be made by the Mike Pence campaign. Ron DeSantis would never put that out. Nikki Haley, no way. Certainly not Chris Christie. The good Republicans, you see, the good old boys and girls, I guess, they just let the radical left get away with these dirty tricks over and over again. And then they try to win an election and then make nice with the Democrats and assume that everything will work as long as we can just be nice. Uniparty. Donald Trump is the only one that will fight them. You're going to indict me for a thought crime? For believing there were shenanigans in 2020? For believing that you stole the election? Well, then here you go. Look at this video, you hypocrites. Look at what you've gotten away with. Look at how much discord you've sown. Look at the atmosphere of mistrust that you've created, to use the language in Jack Smith's indictment. I think we're all more familiar with the election deniers that came out from 2016. But here it is. This is on that video that the Trump campaign put out, number five.
You can run the best campaign. You can even become the nominee. And you can have the election stolen from you.
Trump knows he's an illegitimate president.
But there absolutely is a cloud of illegitimacy.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
The president or elect, although legally elected, is not legitimate.
He is an illegitimate president in my mind.
Could you be my vice president for Canada? Folks, look, I absolutely agree.
So that legitimacy is in question, yes.
I have an objection.
There was a widespread understanding that this election was not on the level.
Some Democrats continued to promote the totally false narrative that President Trump had somehow conspired with the Russians.
The outcome of the election was affected by their interference, and now we need to know
you know, to what degree, if any, the Trump campaign was actually in collusion with Russia.
How can you win with Russian interference, though?
That's what I'm scared about in 2020. But rightly.
Because I think he's an illegitimate president that didn't really win. So how do you, you know, fight against that in 2020?
You are absolutely right.
Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016. He lost the election, and he was put into office because the Russians interfered.
You said you believe that Russia's interference altered the outcome of the election.
I do.
The party of election deniers. They're all over the place in that party. And you see them every time. Every time they lose an election. Stacey Abrams, we could go right down the line. Federal level, state level. Remember when Time Magazine, at the start of 2021, when they talked about what they had ready to go should Trump try to steal the election again? So they were already prepared to deny the results of 2020 if Donald Trump somehow pulled it off. But listen to this astounding admission. This is from February of 2021. The summer uprising, speaking of the summer of love, the summer uprising had shown that people power could have massive impact. I mean, all that violence, it's a positive thing. Well, you know, remember when they were burning down cities? It just showed how powerful the people were. This is when they loved riots. This is when they loved protests that went awry. This is when they loved some looting and burning. Oh, yes. They nearly got away with it at the White House, the Lafayette Park. I mean, so much of that anger, that violence was driven not by Chauvin and Floyd. It was Donald Trump. The bad orange man was in the White House, and they surrounded the White House. Had to take the president, the sitting president of that time, had to put him in the bunker because of violence and burning that was going on just across the street from the White House. No big deal, because, hey, it showed the power of the people, you see? It says here, activists began preparing to reprise the demonstrations if Trump tried to steal the election. So the soldiers were ready to go. If Trump somehow pulled it off in 2020, they were ready to commit acts of violence and loot and burn yet again. It says Americans plan widespread protests if Trump interferes with the election, Reuters reported in October. By the way, how do you think they're going to accept a Trump victory? Should it go that far and he actually wins because he's so overwhelmingly ahead next November? How do you think the radical left, the communist left, the subversive revolutionaries, how do you think they're going to take that? Where's this headed? You can see why Tucker Carlson would say he's very concerned, more concerned than he's ever been. This article says more than 150 liberal groups, from the Women's March to the Sierra Club to the Color of Change, from Democrats.com to the Democratic Socialists of America, joined the Protect the Results Coalition. The group's now defunct website had a map listing 400 planned post-election demonstrations to be activated. They were ready to go. Activated via text message as soon as November 4 to stop the coup they feared. The left was ready to flood the streets. See, even before the election, just the mere thought of a Republican or a conservative winning, they reject it before the vote is even counted. And then if you reject it after it's counted, and there's all these witnesses and affidavits and machine glitches and mules stuffing ballot boxes, they'll send you off to prison. What, 700 years? Listen to Donald Trump. Again, Glenn Beck is asking him here, you know, you were famous for the chant, lock her up, in the lead up to 2016. What's going to happen this time around? This is clip 9.
You said in 2016, you know, lock her up. And then when you became president, you said, we don't do that in America. That's just not the right thing to do. That's what they're doing. Do you regret not locking her up? And if you're president again, will you lock people up?
Well, I'll give you an example. The answer is you have no choice because they're doing it to us. These are sick people. These are evil people.
This time around, Trump says it's going to be different. He's coming in with a little bit of vengeance, motivating motivating him this time around. So where is this? Where is this headed? It's building to an explosion, a collision, to use Tucker's language. Listen to him during an interview yesterday, clip 7.
They protested him. They called him names. He won anyway. They impeached him twice on ridiculous pretenses. They fabricated a lot about what happened on January 6th in order to impeach him again. It didn't work. He came back. Then they indicted him. It didn't work. He became more popular. Then they indicted him 3 more times, and every single time his popularity rose. So if you begin with criticism, then you go to protest, then you go to impeachment, now you go to indictment, and none of them work, what's next? I mean, graph it out, man. We're speeding toward assassination, obviously, and no one will say that, but I don't know how you can reach that conclusion. You know what I mean? Like, they have decided, permanent Washington, both parties have decided that there's something about Trump that's so threatening to them, they just can't have him.
Graph it out, he says. We're speeding toward assassination. No one else is talking. We actually mentioned that a couple weeks ago on this program. They want him out of the way. He's a threat to their power. You're either on their side or you must be destroyed. There was this piece at the American Thinker. It says on January 6, 2021, 2 people were killed in the Capitol, neither of whom was Officer Brian Sicknick. One was Roseanne Boylan, who was crushed to death as unidentified police dumped protesters on top of her. The other, of course, was Ashley Babbitt, a small unarmed woman who was shot to death in cold blood by Lieutenant Michael Byrd when he started to squeeze her way when she started to squeeze her way through a broken window. Byrd was not charged. Now, listen to this. Now he's getting promoted. The message is clear. Byrd's getting promoted, okay? The message in the swamp that is D.C., which is the heart of the deep state, you're either with them or you're against them. If you're against them, if you stand firm, you see all these others, they compromise with the communist left. So they're never going to make a video. They're never going to make a video about 2016 or 2004. They're not even going to go back and look at 2020. They're like Laura Ingraham was last night. Just move on. Let's move. I've never seen any evidence of voter fraud, she says. She's never looked into it. She's never done a segment on it. She's probably never interviewed some of the ones that actually went through the evidence. She joins with the regime media. I probably won't even have time to play the clip from not Rupert Murdoch, but the guy that used to, Roger Ailes, the late Roger Ailes. He used to run the news department at Fox News when everybody loved Fox News, but that's not so anymore. They're just being destroyed. Fire Tucker. Basically blot out certain narratives or messages, even if it's based on truth. Just don't even give it a voice. How could Michael Byrd be promoted? The man gunned down Ashley Babbitt in cold blood, unarmed, and he's not indicted. They never really even investigated him. He gets off scot-free. And better than that, he's on the right side, you see. He's on the right side. He's on the communist side. So they promote him. They give him a nice little promotion. Let's switch back to Rachel Maddow's alarming monologue from last night, clip 2.
I mean, if those are the stakes, if winning the election is his plan to stay out of prison, what happens in that election if and when he does not win it? Does that kind of an election end with a graceful concession to a fair and square reelected President Biden? I mean, if Trump and his supporters see the stakes as losing and going to prison or winning and being president and probably president for life, how should we expect that he and the Republican Party and Republican officials in swing states are going to handle the conduct of that election that Trump may very well lose?
He's not going to make a graceful concession because he's Trump. So say the talking heads that still won't accept defeat, even if it's 20-some years ago. I wonder what she thinks about Bush v. Gore in 2000. If she thinks that Bush legitimately won, or if he was an illegitimate president, Here's Rachel Maddow giving you the two options as she sees it. Two, he either loses next year and goes off to prison, or he wins and there will never be a presidential election again. This is a call to arms. Time magazine already said they had the foot soldiers ready in 2020 in case Donald Trump pulled it off. They're saying he's a fascist dictator. So if he gets in, it's all the gloves are off and the foot soldiers are going to be ready to go again. Just like they were in 2020 and even to some degree in 2016. I mean, look at the hysterical reaction to Trump's inauguration in 2017. People lining the streets. I mean, there was vandalism and all that. I mean, it was like a little preview of what we would see later in 2020, the summer of 2020, surrounding the White House even. Scaling the fences, pummeling security, pummeling the Secret Service. And Michael Byrd, somehow, following January 6, gets a nice, cushy promotion. Listen to one final bit from Maddow last night, clip 3.
We would be remiss, we would be willfully naive to ask that question as if our politics exists in a vacuum. Somewhere outside the rest of our news. As if the politics pages are totally different than the crime pages, right? As if we are not in a moment where far-right politics is coincident with far-right violence, with regular shows of force from paramilitary extreme right groups, and with acts of violence by people who are explicitly and admittedly motivated by far-right eliminationist political ideas. So what should we know? What can we know about what happens in far-right politics when it appears to be in nexus with far, far-right violence that right now is just pinging off the charts?
They're telegraphing, aren't they? Just like I covered yesterday. It's the same kind of message as the Daily Beast article that said, well, here are some things that could alter the election next year. I mean, there could be some violence. That could change things. They're telegraphing. They're not going to accept. They're saying they won't accept it if Trump wins. So what's left? My father writes in the Roots of America's Dangerous Turn Left. This is from January of 2016. Here again. Subscribe to The Trumpet if you aren't a regular subscriber. But he says, Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1962, the Communist Party is merely a trick term to pull the wool over our eyes and deceive us, a means of getting a fifth column into our midst, of getting the enemy's government into our very midst, leading us to accept it as a part of our government. Its only object is to destroy our government. That's the basic truth. The communist movement in America only has one object, to destroy America's government. Further on, he says, modern proponents of communism downplay its subversive goals, but subversion is the very foundation of it. It's like Glenn Beck said, you know, they're actually doing what you said you were going to do to Hillary. Are you going to lock anyone up this time? Well, I have no choice. I've got to. It says, the radical left has gotten control of the government and much of the country. What is the left's end goal? And then he continues quoting Mr. Armstrong. Again, this is from 1962. If it could do it peaceably at the polls, listen to this. If it could do it peaceably at the polls, it would, but it knows it can't. So it does stand for the violent overthrow of the United States government. There's Maddow going on and on about these so-called paramilitary groups and all the militias and the army. That's there to threaten violence against them. And Biden, of course, for his part, out there every other day talking about white supremacy being the greatest danger facing the U.S. And meanwhile, they're destroying cities right and left. They certainly did in the summer of 2020. And they're prepared for more destruction. In many ways, that crazy lunacy on Rachel Maddow's show last night, it's a call to arms. It's admitting ahead of time they will not accept Donald Trump winning an election. And when they know they can't win at the polls, then what do? Well, Mr. Armstrong laid it out for us pretty well in 1962. It says here, this is what my father concludes. This is what it's all about. It has never been merely a political party. It's a movement to destroy the government of America. That's hard to believe that that was written, almost, I guess, 60 years ago. 60 years ago. Again, the communist infiltration of the United States was prophesied. That's the chapter title. And he was right. Call our operators and get a free copy. Go through it. 1-866-930-3024. This clip where Tucker said we're speeding basically toward an assassination attempt. Listen to how he concluded that exchange, clip 8.
Again, if this were happening in Moldova, the State Department would issue an all-hands-on-deck order to let the world know this is not a legitimate government. And yet our government is doing it. It's like it's hard to overstate how bad this is. And I don't know where it's going, but there's a collision that's clearly imminent. And by the way,
there's a collision that's imminent. An imminent collision is coming. And that's where he went on to say that he's never been this worried about anything. So he's speaking without any constraints on him anymore because he's independent. He's sitting down on Twitter for, I know he's working behind the scenes to get some sort of media empire going. But he's concerned, and so are many others. This is from CNN. The FBI is investigating more than a dozen Uzbek nationals allowed into the U.S. after they sought asylum at the southern border with Mexico earlier this year. A scramble set off when U.S. intelligence officials found that the migrants traveled with the help of a smuggler with ties to ISIS. Well, isn't that nice? ISIS now working its way through the southern border. It says, while the FBI says no specific ISIS plot has been identified, officials are still working to identify and assess all of the individuals who gained entry. They just don't. There's just so much they don't know because, I mean, they're pouring in across the border. How can you keep track of all of them? Peter Ducey, he asked Jean-Pierre about this. And here again, she's out there just with word salad after word salad, not saying anything. I mean, the country's going up in flames. It's never been this divided. Put this together with everything that Maddow's saying about Trump, with all of these indictments, with the scheduling of the cases for next March, with what Tucker is saying out there about how dangerous this moment is. It really does feel like 2024 could be a year of multiple collisions, explosions. Well, we've got to step back and get God's perspective. And that's brought out in America Under Attack and also in Great Again and in our magazine, the Trumpet Magazine. This is from AUA. It says, the Bible actually prophesied what is now happening in America. It describes it as bitter affliction. If you don't have this book, please do call our operators and request a free copy. That quote there is about what's prophesied over in 2 Kings 14. It's bitter. The affliction is so bitter, and that passage says there's just no helper. There's no helper. It says here, this book exposes, speaking of America Under Attack, this book exposes the cause of this affliction. The Bible also prophesies that God will save America from this affliction in a specific way through a specific man. Think about that Steve Bannon clip where he said this is only the third time in America's history where the fate of the nation is tied directly to the fate of a man, one individual. My father says here that God will save America from this affliction in a specific way through a specific man. This book, speaking of AUA, gives you advance news of how God will relieve this bitterness soon, giving America its last chance at survival. Understanding these truths supplies invaluable perspective amid the storms battering America. It says here in 2 Kings 14:27 indicates that even if we fail to repent collectively, in His mercy, God will ensure that the name of Israel is not blotted out. He's going to save America, just as he saved our ancestors, by the hand of Jeroboam, temporarily. Riveting prophecies unfolding right before our eyes. That's a nice positive note to end on. And I can end a few minutes early. I can do that because, well, I'm speaking again in about an hour. So cut me some slack. There's a lot going on here at the outset or the start of Armstrong College, the new school year. If you'd like to email the program, you can send a message to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget, if you're watching the show over at our Rumble channel, to leave a nice comment. Certainly give us the thumbs up. You can share the video. You want to spread the message to the largest audience possible. And also, you can join, it's a little bit of a different crowd, but their enthusiasm, you can see it in the comments that they leave. The people over at LFA that are watching this show every weekday night at 8 p.m. in the central time zone of the United States, and then of course, 9 p.m. Eastern. So that's LFA. Don't forget about the Rumble channel. My Twitter handle, again, at Stephen Fleury, Stephen with a P-H. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, as it happens. And this is The Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. And we'll see you again tomorrow.